Moving over to tonight's first speaker, Simon.
Thank you, Tony.
You're welcome, lady. What's going on?
My bag.
Your bag, yeah? Sabotage.
Hi, I'm Simon, and I'm an adult.
Hi, Simon.
I'm going to time myself, just so I don't go too far. But I'm really nervous, I must say. This seemed like such a good idea on Tuesday when Ian asked me to do it. And like, as I heard that last reading sort of going down, I was like, I can't believe I'm doing this. This is madness. And I guess the reason that I believe that is that I'm in quite a bad place at the moment. Like, well, it's not a bad place, but it feels like a bad place. There's some specifics of my life right now that are the fallout of my using that have finally sort of caught up with me and begun to make my life quite complicated. And because of that, I'm living day to day in a lot of self-centered fear. And a lot of my sort of big character defects are playing out on a daily basis, which are like, you know, pride, self-centeredness, self-obsession, dishonesty, you know, like the big ones for me. But I'll get to that a bit later when I've sort of spent, you know, 15 minutes humbling myself with, you know, exactly what I've done and what I've sacrificed to get here tonight and to be able to say that out loud in a room full of people, you know. So I'm just going to start with like a little CV. I'm 2.5 years clean and have two service positions. I take a Tuesday morning meeting in Chelsea at 7:30. I'm the secretary and the chair finder. And I do a treasurer's commitment on a Sunday afternoon meeting in Portobello, but I think they call it Pradenackle. I have a sponsor. I've had my sponsor since I was about sort of 5 or 6 months clean, and I'm on step 8. I'm just about to finish it, which, you know, they say that you work a step, like that you work each step and it sort of works in tandem with your life. Like I've definitely found that, like all this sort of fallout from my using sort of came around the time I started step 8, you know, like it all started to manifest in my daily life around that time. So every time I've done a step, it really feels like I'm facing it. Like each step is so applicable to what's going on in my life at that particular time. But so I came into the rooms 2.5 years ago, and yeah, I mean, I was broken, you know. I was mentally in a really, really terrible place. In that, I was convinced that I had no way of stopping what I was doing other than suicide. In hindsight, that might not be true, but at the time, it felt like the only option, you know. And what sort of brought me to that point was a sort of very long and successful career as a drug user, as a drug addict, and it started at a really young age. And you know, honestly, I had quite a privileged childhood. You know, I sort of grew up in and around Yorkshire and Manchester in the sort of 70s and the 80s, and you know, my parents were together, my grandparents were around, everybody in my family worked, they did well, you know, we did nice holidays. Everything was great up until about the age of sort of 10, 11. And what I remember is that my dad got caught having an affair, and he also sort of lost his job, and he found himself sort of defined by his work and his career. And his sort of whole identity just disappeared almost overnight, for him anyway. Not for me, but certainly for him. And my mum and dad are very good at drinking, but my dad decided that he was going to become the best drinker in the world. And he was going to deal with all his problems by doing that. And he left the house. My mum started partying like crazy, and they sort of went on this sort of long period of getting back together and splitting up again, you know, sort of police coming round to the house to arrest him, lots of mental and physical abuse, like some weird sort of sexual stuff in and around the house. Like basically this house just went from being a really safe place to being a terrifying place. And I remember the sort of my first moment with like the sort of that desire to like want to just obliterate yourself with drugs or alcohol, and it was actually with alcohol. And I was in the second year at high school, and I took the day off school, and I specifically did that to get drunk. And I just, you know, went into my parents' drink cabinet and just drank myself unconscious. And during that period, sort of phoned my mum up and told her what I was doing. She came home and she made me a bacon sandwich and put me to bed, you know. But that began my relationship with drugs and alcohol. And you know, within that sort of first year of doing that, I was taking acid, smoking weed. You know, within years of that, I was doing like a lot of party drugs. And I sort of started to make drugs a part of my life, because what I found was I was sort of really good at using them. And that didn't matter if you were like super famous or if you were 40 or 50. It didn't matter who you were. It didn't matter if you were like the executive of a big company or just another raver like me. If you saw me on drugs, you'd be impressed by me. Or at least that's what I believed, you know? So for a long period of my life, I made using a big part of who I was, you know, right down to the fact that I got like drug nicknames, you know. So I started around 20 years old. And by the way, I'm 40 now, so it's, I've been doing it for a long time. So around 20 years old, I sort of started to destroy my life, you know, like sort of falling out with friends and family. And I realised that I could just leave the country and just move to another place. So I moved to America and started smoking crack in San Francisco. And then I moved to London. And sort of all this time was sort of doing all right with work, you know, like could sort of get good jobs and sort of get careers going. But I would get fired really quickly because every weekend I was just smashing the drugs, you know. And 10... 15 years of doing that sort of, you know, made it impossible to get hired. So I actually sort of built a career where I wouldn't need to get hired. I just sort of relied on myself and could just use as many drugs as I wanted. And in that time, you know, lived in Germany, lived in France, lived in London, lived in Manchester, lived in LA, San Francisco, New York, like got around just smashing the drugs and just being crazy, basically. And then eventually I fell off a building in Paris, off my nut, and ended up in hospital for quite a long time. And that's about sort of 5 or 6 years ago. When I got, a friend of mine died, and my girlfriend ended up in a wheelchair. And when I got out of there, I decided to use that to really, really use. You know, that was my basically my golden ticket to just obliterate my life, you know, and to have reason for it and have sympathy from people and have reason to do it. And during that time, you know, alienated myself from my business partners, alienated myself from any of my clients, ran up hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of debt. And in the end was just sort of in this sort of like little basement flat in Paddington, like spending most of my weekdays hiding from the postman, like off my nut, you know. It's so bad. Like, I mean, as I said, I'd sort of managed to build some sort of like life, you know, and I had a business with people working for me, and like I had the kids from the office like coming round to like, they had keys to the house and they would let themselves into, like, they expected to find me hanging from the ceiling and they'd find me, you know, just messed up on the sofa, you know. And that wasn't enough to make me stop. Like, that just was not enough. I just was convinced that I could just carry on. Until I realised that the only way out was suicide. So that was about 2.5 years ago, and I went to see a really good friend of mine whose mum was a therapist, and I told her what I was doing. I thought I'd hidden it from everyone, but all my friends knew. By this point, my family weren't talking to me. And she told her mum, and her mum referred me to a therapist who 20-odd years in AA, and I sort of went to see him, and he said to me, he wanted to put me in rehab straight away, and the rehab he wanted me to put me in was also a PTSD rehab, and I'd been in that rehab for the accident I was in. So in my drug mind, I just didn't want to go back there, you know? So I refused to go. So he said, well, okay, I want you to go to a meeting a day for 7 days and come back and see me next week and phone me if you get into any trouble. I want you to try and stay clean. So I went to a meeting, and in my first meeting, I saw an old user friend of mine who could never remember who I was. And he could never remember who I was because he was always off his nut on heroin. And he immediately recognized me. And I just immediately just, I was in, you know, I was like, I just, my codependent me was like, oh, thank God he's finally recognised who I am, I'm going to stick around. And I sat next to him for a meeting, and then they announced a tea commitment at the end of the meeting, which I immediately took. So I had a friend in NA, I'd done a meeting, and I had a tea commitment. And I went to a meeting a day for 7 days, and I was still drinking at this point. I was convinced that I could do it without working the steps, and while drinking, I was just going to go to meetings, you know? And then I heard a woman give a chair on the Sunday morning. I decided to do 90 and 90. And during that time, no, that's not true. I'm getting all mixed up. I decided to go to meetings, and I heard this woman do a chair, and her chair was just so heartbreaking and so powerful that I just honestly believe that if she could do it, then I had no excuse to do it. And she's become a really good friend of mine, and I've been on committees with her, I speak to her a lot, and I decided to put the alcohol down. I decided to do my 90 and 90. So I set off doing my 90 and 90. Fast running out of time here. But during that, during the 1990, I found a sponsor, and he wanted me to call him every day. I couldn't do that. I was too self-obsessed and too much of a mess to call him every day. That just was not gonna happen. And he ended up firing me in that time. But during that time, I did go to 90 meetings in 90 days, and my gran on my dad's side, she died, and I got to Liverpool to do like a bedside vigil and stuff. Like, was still running a business, like, just doing everything against doing 99, just making my life as complicated as I possibly could, really, you know? We just make our lives so hard. But I managed to get through it, and when I got through it, that was it, I was in, you know? And I'd see my sponsor during this time, I'd realised that I wanted him to sponsor me, I knew the meetings he went to, and I sort of slowly started stalking him, and then eventually, like, built up the courage to ask him to be my sponsor. And after, you know, sort of 6 months of seeing him in meetings and having him as a sponsor, we started the steps. And during 1, 2, and 3, I still had my business. And I was running it like a madman. And as I got to, you know, so it made steps 1, 2, and 3, like, really easy to do. Not easy, but I saw how they applied to my life. You know, I was acting crazy. I was operating in self-will. I was trying to control this business that was going on. I was trying to maintain this life that just I couldn't maintain because I'd made such a mess of it by being a drug addict. So a big part of doing step 3 was sort of telling the clients what I'd been doing and how I'd been operating and let them decide what to do. They all fired me. And I lost the business, which, you know, was a blessing, because if I hadn't have lost the business, I wouldn't have been able to do steps 4, 5, 6, and 7. I mean, step 4 immediately had a bunch of resentments to get into, you know, and I just cracked on with the steps, and it was hard, you know, like my life was falling to pieces, but the steps helped me to own why they were falling to pieces, and sort of during the course of like the last year and a half of sort of winding down my business as it was and restarting from nothing and realising where I went wrong and the mistakes I've been making in the past and seeing the patterns that had helped me to sort of destroy what life I had, I've been able to sort of humbly accept that I do have a future and I don't have to kind of make the same mistakes again. And being sober, like, and having a support structure around me, like a sponsor and fellows, and being able to come here and like tell my story, like I can avoid those mistakes, you know? And right now, doing step 8, and while also having to prepare for step 9, and a lot of my step 9s, I owe my friends money, you know, because I was just borrowing money off them left, right, and centre. And a big part of my step 9 and step 8 and step 9 is I'm going to have to stop paying those people back, and I have to make some serious life changes. And those life changes are like moving to a smaller place, you know, like spending less money, like being able to actually put cash aside to pay these people back. And that stuff really attacks like my pride, my self-obsession, and you know, I'm really dishonest around that stuff. And, you know, I'm able to talk to a sponsor about it every single day, you know, and I'm able to talk to my friends about it, I'm able to tell a room full of people about it, whereas in the past, I'd just escape into a drug world and wouldn't tell anyone and just pretend like none of that stuff was happening, you know? I got 10 seconds left, so I'm going to leave it there. Thank you.